Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 to 6, Friday evening. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Means one thing. As one American star is born, another burns as brightly as ever. Pin your ears back for this week's coronal mass ejection from Simon Marks, American Week.
Tom, the thing about elections is they tell you precisely what the voters who participate in them are thinking. And this week in Virginia, in New Jersey, Georgia, Ohio, California, and yes, of course, in New York City, they were thoroughly repudiating President Donald Trump.
So Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have four words for you. Turn the volume up.
Zoran Mamdani, the newly minted mayor-elect of New York City, at just 34, a left-wing rock star. He describes himself as a democratic socialist, and on Tuesday night, he became the first Muslim and the first Indian American to win the keys to the Gracie Mansion. His victory address was a barnstormer, commemorating his own very hard-earned landslide.
New York, tonight you have delivered a mandate for change. A mandate for a new kind of politics. A mandate for a city we can afford. And a mandate for a government that delivers exactly that. On January 1st, I will be sworn in as the mayor of New York City.
And starting that afternoon, we will all discover whether he is able to implement the policies that he's promised. Free buses in Manhattan, the extension of regulated rents on more than a million properties in the city, the opening of five city-owned supermarkets aimed at controlling prices, and other plans seeking the general redistribution of wealth. All of that is anathema to Republicans and to the captains of finance who dominate America's business capital, but it is anathema too to many Democrats.
Today is election day in New York City. Did you vote for Mamdani or Cuomo?
Look, I voted, and I look forward to working with the next mayor to help New York City.
Chuck Schumer, at least for the moment, the Democrats' leader in the Senate, unwilling even to say whether he voted for his own party's candidate in the New York mayor's race. But he's in rude company. The Clintons, the Obamas, Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrats' leader in the House, are just some of many party grandees who failed to endorse the mayor-elect nor campaign for him. Mamdani has gone from zero to hero among young grassroots Democrats craving change in just a matter of months, and he mopped up vast amounts of international attention this week. Less attention was paid, however, to another victorious Democrat, Abigail Spanberger, who also in a landslide became the first woman to win the keys to the governor's mansion in Virginia. And just to clarify this bit of her victory speech, Virginia calls itself a commonwealth, not a state. I could explain it, but times are pressing.
Tonight, we sent a message that in 2025, Virginia chose pragmatism over partisanship. We chose our commonwealth over chaos. You all chose leadership that will focus relentlessly on what matters most. Lowering costs, keeping our communities safe, and strengthening our economy for every Virginian.
Now, as you probably picked up there, she ain't no democratic socialist. Picking pragmatism over partisanship belies her very centrist policies. And in a sign of the struggles to come as the Democrats engage in an internecine battle for their party's heart and soul, it is worth recalling that 5 years ago, in audio leaked to the press, she told her fellow Democrats that they needed to mind their language if they wanted to start winning elections.
We're in Congress. We are professionals. We are supposed to talk about things in the way where we mean what we're talking about. If we don't mean we should defund the police, we shouldn't say that. And we need to not ever use the word socialist or socialism ever again.
So the Democrats can absolutely dare to dream after this week's results. After all, they even vanquished the half-brother of Vice President J.D. Vance in the race to become the next mayor of Cincinnati. They had a great night. But the party's identity crisis is only just getting started. Although at least one way too long in the tooth party grandee is finally calling it quits.
Dear San Francisco.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi issuing a video love letter to her constituents, telling them her 38-year run in Congress is coming to an end.
I will not be seeking re-election to Congress. With a grateful heart, I look forward to my final year of service as your proud representative.
She will be 86 by the time she leaves Washington, a remarkable and storied career to be certain. But many young Democrats correctly think she has in recent years blocked and unnecessarily delayed them from picking up the reins of power within the party.
I think she's an able woman. I'm glad she's retiring. I think she did the country a great service by retiring. I think she was a tremendous liability for the country.
President Trump proving once again that common decency has completely evaporated in American public life. But let's be fair, the lads had a lousy week.
Last night, I don't think it was good for Republicans, but we had an interesting evening and we learned a lot.
The president, speaking to Republican lawmakers at the White House on Wednesday at breakfast time, the morning after the night before, and what he appears to have learned is that the thing he has relentlessly called the Democrat government shutdown, now in its second month, the longest ever in U.S. history, is in fact damaging Republicans. Big time.
I thought we'd have a discussion after the press leaves about the shutdown and how that relates to last night. I think if you read the pollsters, the shutdown was a big factor, negative for the Republicans.
Funny that. I mean, who would have thought that the president, whose own party controls both houses of Congress, might be faulted by the public for the government's closure? And consequences that currently include cuts in nutritional assistance for the poorest Americans, a 10% reduction in the number of flights departing from U.S. airports because the country's unpaid air traffic controllers aren't showing up for work, and the furloughing of hundreds of thousands of civil servants who have literally no idea when their next paycheck might finally arrive. The fury out there is real, and yet the president remains out of touch.
The stock market's hitting record highs like 48 times during my 9 months, and it's not just rich people, that's 401ks. I mean, that equates to everybody.
But as Brett Baier of Fox News tried to point out to Donald Trump in that interview on Wednesday, even his network's own viewers simply are not feeling it. And some of them had sent questions of their own in for the president.
Regina Foley messaged me, and she says she is a registered Republican all her life. She voted for you three different times. But she is not happy about how her prices have not come down that she sees. And she said this: Wall Street numbers do not reflect my Main Street money. Please do something, President Trump.
Well, I do say this. Beef we have to get down, but we've got prices way down. And think of this. Energy. She drives a car, probably, and her energy prices are way down. And energy is so all-encompassing. It's so big that when energy goes down, everything comes down. Everything follows it.
You think prices are coming down from this?
I believe that, yeah. I think they're coming down, but I think they're down already.
In less than a minute there, the massive gulf developing between the president, who has turned the White House into a vast money-making machine for himself and his family, and the voters who sent him to Washington in the first place. Like Joe Biden before him, he is telling them not to believe what they can see with their own eyes. Also this week, the country remembered Dick Cheney, George W. Bush's vice president. He died at the age of 84.
In our nation's 246-year history, there has never been an individual who is a greater threat to our republic than Donald Trump. He tried to steal the last election using lies and violence to keep himself in power after the voters had rejected him. He is a coward. A real man wouldn't lie to his supporters.
That was Dick Cheney in 2022, a man himself often accused of lying to Republicans and everyone else about the presence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He was the principal architect of America's ouster after 9/11 of Saddam Hussein and the occupation that followed it. Many think he went to his grave an unindicted war criminal who bore responsibility for the deaths of 4,500 U.S. troops and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. But Cheney told CNN in 2011 that he had no regrets.
It's the Middle East, and stuff happens in the Middle East. I don't think you can make a case that the world would be better off today if Saddam Hussein were still in power. I think we made exactly the right decisions.
Flags in the U.S. are flying at half-mast in honor of Dick Cheney's memory, but the White House says only because the law demands it. President Trump has not uttered a solitary word about a man who served two terms in office and sought to expand the powers of the presidency in ways that Trump himself is now capitalizing upon. Dick Cheney's demise gives us a reason to end today with some David Bowie. So enraged was Bowie by Cheney's war in Iraq that he wrote Fall Dog Bombs the Moon to dishonor him. One can only wonder, Tom, what the Brixton native would have made of American leaders today.
Devil in the marketplace.
From Washington, D.C., Simon Marks, American Week.